5th of July, we completed 5 years of the Nippon journey. And for us, the entire efforts can be actually summarized in our campaign, which is Pehle Shikshit, Phir Viksit. The real change really requires the mission, the program to be on the center of the table for the highest leadership in the state. Just remember, the investments we make now in foundational literacy and numeracy in the kids which are currently in the school in those classes, we are exactly 21 years away from Viksit Bharat, 2047. Right. The workforce of 2047 are in these classes at the moment.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I am your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. The disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspiration, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. It is as much about the personal life stories as about the entrepreneurial and professional and philanthropic journeys too. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, Spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, we are going to talk about something exceptionally fundamental and essential, particularly in the context of the goal that we have set for ourselves for India to be a developed nation by 2047, because the choices we make today will shape the next two decades. And that journey begins in our classrooms. Strong foundational learning is the bedrock of the workforce. The more qualitatively superior workforce that we create and the foundations of that will be laid in the classrooms, that will drive India's next phase of growth. That's exactly where initiatives and programs like the Nippon Bharat Mission step in. There's no gainsaying the fact that Nippon Bharat probably is one of India's most complex, large-scale educational transformations that has been attempted and probably in the world too. It seeks to achieve universal foundational literacy and numeracy, and often described as FLN, in children up to grade 5. It was launched about 5 years ago when we were in the middle of that devastating pandemic, and the mission aims for meaningful improvements in educational outcomes in the assessment year 2026-27, which is now in this year, despite enormous challenges, including the pandemic, of course, when it was launched. To discuss all about this on the podcast today, we'll reflect on the 5 years of Nippon Bharat Mission, its progress, milestones, and gaps that need to be filled. We are joined by Ishmit Singh, the CEO of Center Square Foundation, a nonprofit established in 2012 to promote education and enhance learning outcomes across all school-going children in India. Ishmit brings over 3 decades of leadership experience across FMCG telecom, primarily, and with CXO roles at Unilever, Vodafone, Mattel Asia, among others. In 2021, he transitioned to the development sector and led health initiatives at Piramal Foundation. In his last role as CEO of Piramal Swasta, over the last 5 years, Ishmit has been instrumental in establishing the Global Alliance for Viksit Bharat, a $200 million initiative across the Purvodaya states focused on health, nutrition, and education to address multidimensional poverty. Delighted to have you, Ishmit.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Gaurav. Excited to be here too.
Ishmit, let's start off with a very basic question, but fundamental nonetheless. We are 5 years into Nippon Bharat's launch. It was launched in 2021 in the middle of the pandemic that, of course, all of us were recovering from the devastating consequences of the pandemic and the loss that COVID brought about. 5 years on, where do we stand? What is the headline that you think we should be talking about? And how does this headline story look like? How far has the needle moved? Is it to something that we had anticipated and planned for, or there's still a lot many miles to traverse here? Ishmit?
So thank you very much, Gaurav, once again. And yes, as you rightly said, Nipun Bharat arguably has been the most complex and large-scale transformation programs which anyone in the world has taken over. With the numbers we have in our country, I think it's always been the biggest challenge. To answer your question, in my opinion, we have moved a lot of distance. I think the fact that we were coming out of COVID and the first year of the so-called launch year of Nipun Bharat, we were still, in the closure stages and of the pandemic, and the learning really started off only in the next year onwards. If I were to say that what has been the achievement in the last 5 years, I think the fact that foundational literacy and numeracy is certainly become center of the table for all the state governments and the government of India. I think that's been very pivotal. The whole budget utilization, which is quite many a times the benchmark of how a program is doing, utilization has climbed up from, you know, a 52% level, which was towards foundational literacy earlier in 2020-2022, to over 80% level to the numbers we have last available of 2024 in across the 28 states and union territories, which is now spending more than half the funds available. So the fact that 80% of the states were spending it at that level now is really a reflection of their focus on what needs to be done in these classes.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so it's good that you talked about the involvement of the states, because and the kind of work that the states themselves are doing in this area.
Yes.
Because without the states, this cannot move, because the children are in the states. And that is where the work will have to actually be executed. So how do you categorize the work done by states in achieving some of the Nipun learning outcomes and witness genuine improvement results? I mean, are the markers something that are very satisfactory at this point in time? How do you think states have performed, say, for instance, in terms of mission salience, teaching learning materials and teacher training, for instance? Ishmit?
Yeah. So I think if I were to start with the big numbers, I think 75% of schools now have at least one FLN-trained teacher available, which is a big one, which is the number which was as low as 30-40% probably earlier. And 73% of them have received the teaching learning material in time before the classes have to start every year. So for me, this has been two big movements as far as inputs are concerned.
Right.
If I look at the outputs and the points you made about mission salience, let me take about mission salience, because that's one thing which, you know, states like Uttar Pradesh and Madhya Pradesh have done extremely well. Two very large states with huge population of children in the FLN classes. The real change really requires the mission, the program to be on the center of the table for the highest leadership in the state. And that's really what this mission has achieved in those states. Quite like the Swachh Bharat mission, which was there earlier, the Nipun Bharat mission was something which is on the CM's table. The CM is reviewing it very regularly. And for them, the entire Viksit UP program, for example, in UP, the foundational literacy and numeracy targets of year on year are very much on the center of the table.
Right.
And the result, therefore, is faster decisions. The result is that, you know, there's a routine use of field data which is happening to by the leadership team to program, monitor the program. And of course, UP has now become one of the strongest voices we have, which is about extending the Nipun mission beyond just what is going to finish next year, the first phase of the program.
Right. You know, Ishmit, there are also the three enablers, like, for instance, structured mentoring, pre-primary foundations, and monitoring. However, these are sometimes treated as supporting elements. Aren't they actually also extremely central, whether the first three work at all or not? Because why are we treating them as supporting elements and not central elements, Ishmit?
Yeah. No, I think they are very much central, because end of the day, you must understand the baseline we are starting off is extremely low. You had numbers in 2021 where almost 70% of the children in grade 5 were not able to, be of the same competency or learning levels similar to a grade 2 child. So with these kind of numbers, to now almost 60% of the children reaching the targets on literacy and numeracy, which is what the results of the Parakh Rashtriya Sarvekshan in 2024 or the ASSAR results have actually shown. So the movement has really happened because a lot of effort has been done, not only by the teachers and the teaching learning material, etc., and the mission program, but I think very critically by the three enablers you mentioned about structural mentoring, the foundations being laid in the pre-primary level classes of schools, and the monitoring being done both by the school leadership, the block leadership, the district leadership. Because end of the day, that's the last mile where actually the rubber has to hit the road. And the teaching classroom practices, the teachers need support not only in terms of the material, but they also need support of their supervisors to provide them enough resources, provide them time to guide them. You need a lot of on-the-job hand-holding by the mentors. You need a lot of monitoring by them in terms of to make sure that the materials are reaching on time. The classroom practices or the curriculum is helping the students learn. So the mentors not only come and meet them, observe the classroom practices of the teachers, they also do spot assessments to really see whether the students are learning and they're actually picking up those competencies, whether it's a simple place value, subtraction of two digits, addition of two digits, or being able to read a paragraph and understand the paragraph, the reading, understanding, comprehension, or the oral reading fluency. How is that moving? I think each of these critical competencies, although very simple they found, but they are really fundamental to the communication skill development of the child and understanding simple numeracy.
You know, Ishmit, if I had to ask you about where it has fallen short, what are the most critical implementation gaps in your view that still need to be addressed before March 2027? Because the ambitions are also quite steep, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think for us, this first phase, which is up to next year, is something which is, while this, I think, great progress made on some basic inputs and infrastructure requirements which have to come in. I think a lot has to be done in terms of really pushing for the classroom practices. Mm-hmm. The classroom practices, the teachers' capabilities to be able to understand and to focus on the key goals of foundational learning literacy still requires support. The district and the block orientation to support the teacher and the time on task for the teacher is very critical. Mm-hmm. The second one, I think, which requires really thing is the assessment architecture. As I mentioned earlier, there is a survey which is done by ASSAR separately. Then there is something which the national NCRT runs, which is under the whole Parakh Rashtriya Sarvekshan, which happens every 3 years. While these are great markers for the states to know the progress they are making, but the states need to have a proper assessment architecture which they can actually track once or twice a year to see the kind of progress they are making. So that which are the areas they need to focus on, which are the inputs which they are lagging behind, which is the capability which the teachers are lagging behind, which are some of the times, the classroom practices which they need to support. So they need to have a proper assessment infrastructure in place. The third thing I would say is in terms of, orientation from a national and state leadership towards supporting and enabling an environment for the classroom and school practices. What's obviously happening is that the school class teachers are being pulled into many directions, census happening, SIR happening, etc. So the time and task does remain a challenge. I think there's a lot of reflection which the political and state leadership needs to do in terms of how do we allow more time on task to the teachers to really focus on enabling the classroom and ensuring and focus on the foundational literacy and numeracy parameters. So the time on task is another area which we need to focus on. Just remember, the investments we make now in foundational literacy and numeracy in the kids which are currently in the school in those classes, we are exactly 21 years away from Viksit Bharat, 2047. Right. The workforce of 2047 are in these classes at the moment. So that's what we need to focus. So the next 10 years, I think we need some dedicated, committed focus from not only the state and district leadership, but also from the teachers to ensure that the children are picking on the foundational learning, literacy and numeracy skills.
You know, Ishpit, you make a good point. You talk about assessment, and it's assessment will continue to remain a recurring theme in education reform. And this is a kind of reform that is, it cannot follow the usual markers of, say, a financial sector reform, for instance, because we're talking about not just systems reforms, we're also talking about human resource and pedagogy reforms and many other related moving parts in the entire universe of this. But do you think that the current approach, because there's a view that the current approach has been more episodic and not diagnostic enough. What does an assessment architecture that actually drives learning outcomes in India look like from your vantage point, Ishmit?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, Gaurav, because another reflection, I think ASSER has been giving inputs at a national level across government and private schools for many years to say as to how the foundational literacy, numeracy skills, are children in grade 5 able to read class 2 text or not, or do they have those competencies? Of course, on the same lines, we have had a National Achievement Survey, or the NAS, which has been giving similar inputs. And we also now have the Parakh Rashtriya Sarvekshan doing PRS surveys every 3 years, as I mentioned. I think they've been great markers and they are required. But what really is useful is to have a competency-based assessment, which the school, through their formative and summative assessments, is able to do, and the state is able to do at a district, block, and at a school level, an assessment on the same competencies which they need to do, both from a grade 1 level, grade 2 level, or even at a pre-primary level in terms of what is the school readiness parameters. So having a competency-based architecture at the key stages, regularly on a standard format across states, is very critical to be able to study the longitudinal data and to be able to compare the performance of one state or one district versus the other. Another critical part of this is how is that data being used by the schools to inform instructions and classroom practices. I think that's one piece which we have really fallen short of, and we are hoping to now work with the states and the national agencies to drive that. But each assessment which the school does or the district does, how does the information flow back to the classroom through the teachers, through the supervisors, through the mentors, to inform the classroom practices? If the student is falling short, if a student is falling short on place value, or on reading comprehension, or the oral reading fluency is not coming up, what are some of the initiative and catch-up practices which we must institute as a part of this? The structured pedagogy, as you know, lesson plan which we have created and which all the states are now following, has remediation built into it. But clearly, once we do an assessment, we obviously understand that some students are falling behind on one competency or the other. How does this assessment form the classroom instruction practices of the teacher becomes very important. And that's what is one thing which we want the forward-looking assessment architecture to ensure, that while there's a standard competency-based assessment which needs to be done, how do we analyze the results to make sure we are able to inform the teachers?
Right. Absolutely. You know, Ishmit, we are in the high noon of artificial intelligence, the artificial intelligence era, if I may say so. And technology has been both a promise as well as also a risk in India's education story. For instance, just as an example, if I may say so, during the COVID pandemic, schools went online, and rightly so, while the education sector or the edtech sector was, appreciated for the very quick turnaround and putting systems in place so that children don't miss school. However, families and households of a certain income class who had only one smart device in their homes, we saw some kind of a hushed segregation on gender basis. And that was quite unfortunate because, in most families that had only one smartphone, it invariably, there has now been evidence that the son ended up getting the smartphone and the daughter probably, many of the daughters dropped off. So with 85% of rural households now having a smartphone access, How does CSF think about EdTech's role in the Nipun Bharat journey, Ishmael?
Thank you very much for asking that question. In fact, that's going to be, in my opinion, a great enabler going forward. As you know, the Bharat survey of EdTech, which we do, has shown the numbers which you mentioned. Over 85% of households in rural India now have a single house, single device. The second piece of information, which even it throws out, which is even better, that 56% of them have two devices now available in the house. And the third piece of information, which it throws up, which is even better, I would say, is that you have a range of at least 10 minutes to half an hour as the time which the students in that class, in that family, are actually able to access those smartphone devices by the parent giving them to do something or the other. So the students are already, the learners are already spending 10 to 30 minutes on those devices. Mm. How do we actually use that as the catalyst to create the right set of home learning tools which the parent and the teacher can actually assign to the student and give them that time on their devices to actually use that? We have already done many of these pilots. We are now working with many states to see how some of these solutions can be embedded in the classroom practice, where the teacher teaches something and the content on that application, which she assigns as a homework to the students to go back and do it on their parents' devices, can actually accelerate the learning processes of the children. And there have been proven results to say that even 10 minutes of regular practice using some of these EdTech tools can actually accelerate the learning of the child and can provide an excellent option for the child to practice, catch up on some of the competencies which they might have missed in class. Because these tools are very exciting. The children love to play on it. It's game-based, play-based tools on a simple principle of adaptive learning for the child. So we've been actually working with many states to pilot and understand and enable these tools which have been available by multiple players in the ecosystem. Helping the government, schools and the teachers to understand that how these tools can be effectively used by them to reinforce the learnings the students are having in the class. So I think if we can able to, first of all, have enough of these applications and tools available. Second, work with the government school system and the administration to embed the procurement of these tools and the processes which the classroom teachers need to do to ensure that they use these tools as reinforcement, catch up, and engaging their students to actually go home and use it. Some of the senior classes, of course, have devices available in the class. So even some of the classroom sessions can be done on the devices to facilitate the learning. So in fact, the whole personalized adaptive learning tools, which many of states are already experimenting for classes 6 to 8, on actually giving them access to smart classrooms, to computer labs, where they actually sit on these tools, sit on these applications, and the students can actually do their learning, catch up, reinforcement of what the teachers have taught in the class. And I think there is a lot of opportunities there, and we are looking at not only in terms of these kind of EdTech tools, but to also answer the other question of how AI is actually coming in, and we are now bringing in AI to not only build better applications with the partners, but also in terms of introducing them to support the teachers, whether it's on terms of coaching, AI coach, helping the teachers to create a better lesson plan, a better classroom activity, and supporting the teacher to be able to reinforce some of the aspects which the teacher may not be able to immediately get on their own. And so that's another aspect of AI coach for the teacher is also something which we are now developing with many of our partners. And we are hoping to introduce that into the classroom practices very soon as well.
Absolutely. You know, Ishmit, final question. Let's talk about India and the enormity of the challenge and the sheer scale. You know, there are 265 million students.
Children. Yeah.
Yeah. There are 1.5 million schools, 9.5 million teachers. However, there is enormous amounts of capital scarcity too, and the extent of capital scarcity is something that we probably need to address, because it would be kind of a travesty if, because of lack of capital, we aren't able to achieve the goals that we have set for ourselves. Philanthropic capital, for instance, is less than 3% of the government's education investment. What is CSF's theory of change at this scale, Schmidt?
So there are very interesting aspects. Should there be more philanthropic capital to support the government's investment, or should there be more government investment in education to drive some of these aspects? That's going to be always going to be a question there. We are currently, as a government, GDP percentage of GDP, the government investment is in the range of 3% plus, which is pretty much what many developing countries have it. Should we be targeting a higher percentage, especially because this is a critical area for us? India is at a 56% learning poverty levels. And if we don't invest and do a focused effort in this area, it could take us up to 50 years plus for us to come up that curve. So the fact that a Nippon program has put in extra investment on foundational literacy and numeracy in the last 5 years, and we've been able to buck that curve and, you know, increase the learning outcomes by almost 10% in the last 5 years, is clearly evidence that we need to put extra focus in this age 10, 0 to 10 years of age, and in the foundational literacy and numeracy. So I think the evidence that we need to put more investment in this focus by the government is already there. And we are working in advocating with the government to see if they can actually increase the investment in these stages for foundational learning and literacy and numeracy for the next 10 years, and ensure that they extend this program by another 10 years to actually ensure that we continue to buck this trend and continue to increase our learning outcomes by 2-3 percentage points every year. That's really our first appeal to the government, which we are making to the ministry. And we are hoping that next year when we go in for the extension, we are not only able to extend the Nipun Bharat focus only beyond grade 2 to up to grade 5, which is the entire primary stage of the education, but also to make sure that the quality initiatives, including EdTech, we get some investments coming in from the educational budget into these stages to help it. I think among the philanthropic capital, I think we are advocating clearly, and many partners along with CSF are making sure they are putting their efforts to support the state governments to implement the Nipun Bharat policy and to implement the Nipun Bharat initiatives across these stages, across all the levers of, you know, teaching learning material, teacher capacity, monitoring, supervision, etc. I think the biggest business case for investments in foundational literacy really lies in the end state picture. If we are looking at Viksit Bharat, you know, where we're going to have 7.8 million additional young people, which need study employment at that stage. We're going to have economic output, which is going to increase because of these additional people coming into the workforce, of over 3,500 lakh crores. We're going to have an additional higher GDP growth of around 45-46% coming in only because of this skill workforce coming in, additional workforce coming in the Viksit Bharat. I think that for me is the strongest business case to actually increase our investments in foundational literacy and numeracy, both by the government as well as the philanthropists. For us, this week, current week, is very important. On 5th of July, we completed 5 years of the Nippon journey. And for us, the entire efforts can be actually summarized in our campaign, which is Pehle Shikshit, Phir Viksit, which really talks about the fact that how important has foundational literacy and numeracy been, and how important it is us. And when we start 21 years from the entire 2047 Viksit Bharat aspiration, I think the having foundational literacy and numeracy on the center of the table to say Pehle Shikshit, Phir Viksit Bharat is an important campaign for us. And I think thank you very much for the support, and we continue to build on that campaign going forward.
Absolutely. Very well said, Schmidt. And thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us and sharing your deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Gaurav. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I think thank you very much for you to pick up this important topic and using your channel to talk to the consumers. Thank you very much.